For WKU Public Radio, this is Joe Corcoran. Earlier this year, researchers discovered evidence that white nose syndrome was spreading to more areas of Mammoth Cave National Park. Now, as Emil Moffitt reports, the continued movement of the disease from east to west may mean bad news for farmers across the country.
After a 10-minute climb up a gentle incline just off the main trail at Mammoth Cave National Park, Rick Toomey stands on a wooden platform overlooking Dixon Cave.
It's one of our most important hibernation sites.
He says during the winter, thousands of bats, including several different species, hibernate here. But those numbers might be on the verge of a drastic change.
This is a site that could be vastly altered in 5 years. In 5 years, we might go in there and find 5 or 10 bats total. It's a very realistic possibility based on what's been seen elsewhere. And that would be devastating to our ecosystem up here.
The problem? White nose syndrome. It started in the Northeast in 2006. It was first noticed in Mammoth Cave National Park in 2013 and has since spread to the caves that welcomed nearly 500,000 visitors last year. Rick Toomey is research coordinator at Mammoth Cave. He says the fungus that gives white nose syndrome its name is just one of the symptoms of the devastating disease.
This fungus seems to cause them to wake up a lot more often, burn through fat reserves, so they end up looking emaciated, they look dehydrated.
The disease is fatal in some bat species. It's not harmful to human health, but scientists continue to warn the biggest consequence to humans could be an economic one. Researchers at Mammoth Cave have not seen a mass die-off, but they say they may get a better picture of the effects of white nose syndrome in a few months after the next hibernation season. In the Northeast, meantime, the mortality rates are staggering. In some populations, like the little brown bat or the northern long-eared bat, there's a 98% to 99% drop-off in population. In all, it's estimated that over 5 million bats have died from white nose syndrome. And that's where the economic impact comes in. As Rick Toomey points out, bats play an important role in the ecosystem.
Bats are the most important consumers of night-flying insects.
A 2011 study estimated the economic impact of bats on the agriculture industry between $3 billion and $50 billion annually. As white nose syndrome slowly inches south and west, it may begin to threaten areas whose economies depend more heavily on agriculture. But measuring the effect of the disease on the insect population remains a challenge.
We've got annual changes in weather and spraying and various other environmental impacts that are going to be influencing the number.
That's Jonathan Reichert with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who says researchers will continue trying to find ways to parse those numbers.
We can design some studies that will get at it through some elaborative empirical design, but farmers most likely would be the first ones to see it.
So what can be done to stop the spread of white nose syndrome? Scientists believe the most common way the disease is spread is from bat to bat. Some species of bats have prolific migration patterns. In addition to bat migration spreading the syndrome, it can also be passed incidentally by humans. That's why at Mammoth Cave, when visitors emerge from a cave tour, they walk across a black mat soaked in a woolite solution, which Toomey says has shown effectiveness in killing the spores carrying the fungus.
We are actually trying to defend Colorado, New Mexico, Oregon, California.
Currently, there's no cure for white nose syndrome, but researchers say they will continue trying to achieve a better understanding of what it does to bats and what impact it might have on the rest of the ecosystem and the economy. For WKU Public Radio, I'm Emil Moffitt. This is Emil Moffitt for WKU Public Radio. In the 10-county region surrounding Bowling Green, some 720,000 airline tickets were purchased last year, which begs the question, is there a need for commercial airline service in Bowling Green? And if so, what would it look like? Airport officials and city leaders have been exploring that topic for several years now, but recently hit a bump in the road when $750,000 to help make that goal a reality was, at least for the time being, pulled back. At a coffee shop just down the road from Bowling Green Warren County Regional Airport, it's 10:45 in the morning, and Sonia Dick has just a couple of hours to go before she hops in a rental car and drives to Indianapolis for business. She works as a clinical specialist for a regenerative tissue company.
I work with customers, researchers, people all over the United States and other countries as well. I cover Latin American and Asian Pacific.
That means she's on the road a lot, normally driving to Nashville to catch a flight there. But what if she could connect to a larger airport without making the drive down I-65?
It would be a huge change for me. I would save at least 3 hours a week that I could be home. I could be more productive for work or just enjoying my time at home.
It's been over three decades since there was commercial air service in Bowling Green. Airport manager Rob Barnett says they've done comprehensive studies on where people from the Bowling Green area are flying. Barnett says if commercial air service were to come to Bowling Green, it would make the most sense for the carrier to connect customers with Chicago O'Hare Airport or Atlanta. He says the small airport in Bowling Green is built to handle commercial service.
Minimal modifications, be it temporary modifications, would be made to this particular terminal building at a minimal cost in order to let the airline come in, operate, prove the markets here, show us they're committed to this community, and then look in the future of building some type of permanent terminal building.
And he says the rest is ready to go.
As we sit today, the infrastructure at the airport is in very good shape.
As lawmakers convened in Frankfurt earlier this year, $750,000 was included in the new two-year transportation bill. But when it came time for Governor Beshear to sign the bill into law, he used a line item veto to take out that money for the Bowling Green Warren County Regional Airport and two other development projects. Speaking to WKU Public Radio's Lisa Autry last week, Beshear says he supports commercial air service in Bowling Green, but his first priority is making sure the $6 million allotted for the state's 53 airports is enough to cover upkeep and security.
It could well be that we'll be able to work out something on that Bowling Green project in this next couple of years.
Even with that caveat, airport manager Rob Barnett says the loss of the money was disappointing.
Certainly a setback. Absolutely. I would agree with that entirely. We have worked diligently, and when I say we, I'm from our state representatives to the county judge to the mayor to our Chamber of Commerce, our congressmen, and all those folks have been working on this particular air service development initiative for over 7 years.
Barnett says he met with Beshear earlier this week and got his assurance that the airport would still be considered to receive part of that $3 million earmarked for airport development. Still, Barnett says he's not content to sit back and wait.
Again, there's more of a sense of urgency here. I've actually been in discussions with several different airlines. They've shown interest in our community, but it is going to take an attractive incentive package in order for them to come to Bowling Green and start service. You know, we've had airline offers before, to be quite honest with you. Those particular airlines did not serve the hubs that were preferable to our traveling community.
A traveling community that may one day be able to catch a flight out of town without taking a road trip first. For WKU Public Radio, I'm Emil Moffitt.